I think we lost them.
Stupid dibble grippers! What are these things?
Why the hell did you go back?
Because this show is terrible!
God damn it, Dan. It took you 3 years to get out of here the last time you went in?
A, I don't even remember that happening. And B, we're in this together now, pal.
Why did I agree to this? You're never gonna change your mind.
We should have gone with my original idea. You know, the one where we watch every episode of Walker, Texas Ranger in Flemish with English subtitles? Oh, God. I wish I could take it all back.
That's it!
What's it?
Dan, we can fix this, Dan. We can fix it. I have a plan.
No. Count me out. The last time you said you had a plan, I wound up watching the show. I couldn't stand.
We've only got one shot at this. Do you trust me?
I literally do not trust anything you say.
Let's rock.
Really? That's how we're in it? Fine. Let's rock!
The Black Lodge Complaint Department, your source for all the Twin Peaks ire you could possibly handle. I am your host, one Daniel Williams.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Bauer, your source for all of the Twin Peaks passion you could possibly handle.
Wow, you got your own thing now.
All right, well, just this episode.
All right.
Here we are, back again to discuss the return. Daniel has had a very turbulent relationship with this,
this season,
foray back into Twin Peaks. Last week was pretty notable because you really enjoyed that episode.
I did, although I'll tell you, sitting here with you in front of the microphones right now, do not remember a thing about it.
It was the one that pushed all those plot points forward.
I do love pushing plot points. I do remember that Alvin Roserbaum met the love of his life, and
yeah,
that is very exciting.
We'll get some follow-up here, so
yeah,
that's
a little
cool.
Bit.
But overall, you were not happy with this episode. Watching this, I knew you weren't going to like it. We had a lot of stuff moving last week, so this one was slowing things and letting things simmer now for a little bit until we have another big jostle.
It's weird that I had so many notes for this episode because I feel like not much happened to write home about, but looking back over them again, I've got some thoughts. Not even mentioning the misogyny and abuse against women, just in general, got notes. So.
Yeah, you feel very passionate about this episode. So.
Okay, that's weird. Shall we discuss part 10? We're halfway through the series, man.
Yeah, we are.
We did it.
Heading straight towards the finale. This episode was written by Mark Frost and David Lynch.
Oh, really?
Directed by none other than David Lynch himself.
Yes.
And it originally aired July 16th, 2017. It's part 10 of The Return. Here we are in Twin Peaks, a place we're not at very often these days, but we start the episode. It looks like a trailer park.
Adam, you remember your favorite character from the show, Miriam. Everyone loves Miriam.
Actually, I do. Miriam was a really bubbly, energetic character, and she stuck out to me.
Who have we met Miriam before?
We met her at the Double R when she was having that extra slice of pie and talking
the
about...
The teacher!
Yeah, the kindergarten teacher. Oh. Remembered a few minutes later, she witnessed Richard Horn running over that poor defenseless child.
So speaking of Richard Horn...
He is outside Miriam's trailer, which is a recipe for disaster because Miriam is obviously not a fighter. And
what?
Richard Horn is a very violent psychopath who knows she witnessed him murder some child.
Well, luckily, he wants to talk. That's all, Miriam. And that's a sentence I've only ever heard dangerous psychopaths say is, hey, I just want to talk.
Why she didn't immediately get on the phone with the police department or a neighbor or somebody, I don't know. I mean,
this whole situation is insane because she tells Ricky the Peen that she wrote a letter to the sheriff. Why didn't she immediately call the sheriff? Why didn't anybody immediately call the sheriff's department? Why is this not something that they're actively investigating?
Maybe she didn't have a phone. You know, maybe
she could have walked right back into the Double R Diner. But,
and said, hey, Richard Horn just killed somebody.
Yeah, this makes it sound like no one contacted the authorities after this horrible accident, you know?
Yeah, that is kind of a weird instance. I think throughout the show, there are scenes like this that logically they seem to not fit and make sense. And I think within the larger meta narrative of Twin Peaks, there's a reason for that that I can't talk about right now.
Okay.
But I will agree with you, yeah.
Well,
after he realizes she doesn't have the letter and she's a witness, he decides to murder her. So he rushes Miriam's trailer and breaks in. And
yeah, he kicks the fucking glass in her door and we don't get to see him violently attack her.
No, it's done off screen, yeah.
Which is, you know what? Not my favorite way to start an episode of any television show. So does he kill her outright? It looks like he just knocks her unconscious.
He beat her viciously, anticipating she would not survive. And then as he left, he turned on the gas and lit a candle like an idiot, thinking that would work.
And this is the fucking problem with millennials these days. Finish the job, Richard. Don't leave someone for dead. Kill them dead.
Yeah, he had a vague idea of the things you should do in that situation, but the execution was all off, Richard.
Now, okay, let's address this first. He turns the gas on and lights a candle. Now, I've never exploded a building, but I do have a general idea of how it works, and you have to have a buildup of the gas. We both saw him, you and I, and Miriam for that matter, saw him kick the door in, broke the glass, thus allowing natural gas from the stove to escape.
Yeah, and it's a trailer, not a large home.
Not
so,
to mention
I mean,
all the windows are open.
Yeah, so there are really plenty of places for that gas to escape, which is good for Miriam because he did not kill her. Yeah, she might survive.
Yeah, so I hope that she survives and that she goes on a vendetta and hunts him down and fucking straps him to a chair and hammers his dick to the chair like in The Walking Dead.
Of the few people in the show that deserve that fate, Richard Horne is definitely one of them. He's the most despicable character.
Twin Peaks just turns into a fucking rampage from Miriam. That'd be awesome. Okay, so
after
Richard's
that
a fucking
scene,
idiot.
Yeah, Richard's stupid and evil.
Yeah. He calls fucking Chad.
Yeah, the most disgusting deputy. We all know Chad is a problem. He needs to be dealt with. He's the one corrupted person within the Twin Peaks Sheriff Department.
And no one likes him there.
No, yeah.
Okay. So he calls Chad. Why?
Because Chad is his man on the inside, and he wants Chad to intercept Miriam's letter before Sheriff Truman does.
Yeah. Does Chad not know what Lil Dick did? It's one thing to be kind of a corrupt cop, but your buddy brutally ran down a child.
I don't understand why Chad is working or is a subordinate of Richard. Yeah. It must have something to do with the drug trade, maybe.
Police in the Pacific Northwest love to deal in drugs. We know that. At least in the Twin Peaks universe. I wasn't speaking ill of actual law enforcement in the Pacific
Northwest. Yeah, in the Twin Peaks universe. You know, Jean Reno built that town on pure Canadian no snow.
So Chad is like, duh, okay, I'm going to get your letter for you, duh.
Sure thing, boss.
Yeah. Little Dicky throws some random expletive. I wasn't even listening because I was just so angry.
Fuck that guy.
And we're more or less done.
Yeah, and we're going to go from that trailer park to another trailer park.
Oh, Fat Trout, where there's some more abuse against women. Bam, bam.
Yeah.
Doubleheader.
Yeah, you're talking about the nature of evil here. You know, humans hurt others for pleasure and gain. These are important themes in Twin Peaks. And it all started with Laura, you know, a woman being a victim of violence. So these themes are, you know, very integral to Twin Peaks, and they should be painful and nauseating and make you angry.
It seems to mostly target women, you know?
But you got Briggs getting his head chopped off, a young boy getting run over,
I said mostly.
I mean, it is what it is. You know, I think there is an important conversation here to have about women and Twin Peaks. I'm just not the person to have it because I am not knowledgeable at all, and I would stick my foot in my mouth and all that stuff.
All you have to do to avoid that is to repeat after me. David Lynch is a monster and he hates women. Say it, Adam, say it.
That is a very controversial opinion.
Okay.
He hates women.
Listen, just to set the record straight for all our listeners, Adam is not a misogynist. He does not hate women. He
believes in the artist's right to express themselves, even if it is upsetting to some people.
And violent, especially towards women. Moving on, Harry Dean Stanton is having himself a little jam sesh outside his trailer/office.
Yeah, he's hanging out outside, enjoying the beautiful morning, singing Red River Valley, which is a folk song from the 1800s when Henry Dean Stanton was born.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's what they sang at his birthing ceremony, correct?
I'm glad we went to the same place.
I don't want to be mean. I love Harry Dean Stanton, even though he is 600 years old.
I called him Henry Dean Stanton in that line.
That's failing, buddy. Yeah. That's a 33%. You're going to have to take the test over again. He's doing his best. That's the point. And you know, Adam, so are you. Across the way, in another trailer, and outside of that trailer, a coffee cup goes flying out the window.
Yeah, what the hell's going on here? We've never seen this particular trailer before, and there's some nasty shit going on in there.
Yeah, rat face snot guy is being abusive to Amanda Seyfried, you know what? I didn't bother to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Steven.
Yeah, the guy that tried to get a job at Mike's office.
And Becky?
She's kind of falling into this cyclical nature of abuse where she connects to a shitbag. Yeah. You know, in Shelley's case, it was Leo.
Also, it was Bobby.
That was Bobby, too. You're right.
But it was a different kind of shitbag.
Yeah, I will say it was Bobby in the beginning, but she kind of was the catalyst for him becoming a better person.
That's true. And in situations like this, it would be interesting to see, and this isn't Lynch's wheelhouse, but to see Bobby talk to Becky about kind of the nature of relationships and stuff, because Bobby grew in to become a better man.
Yeah.
So he would be able to recognize, and a lot of people are recognizing Steven's bad behavior, but was episode 2, there are people that are going on at the Roadhouse at the end of the episode. They're talking about how Becky's husband's great. Everyone loves him.
Yeah, there are some blind spots there in the town.
Point being, it would be nice to see Bobby talk to his daughter about her relationship and say, you know what? I've been on both sides of this. I've seen it from various angles, and this is unhealthy for you.
Well, we might get that one day. We just got to stick with it.
I mean, we've seen Bobby's dad talk to him.
Yeah, it'd be a nice echo there to the callback to the original series.
Thank you.
Becky's not doing well. Steven is worse than we thought. Obviously, they're both becoming intoxicated and they're codependent.
Yeah.
And he's just lashing out. They both need therapy and recovery, but that's not happening. And Carl sounds like he's used to this, unfortunately. He says it's a fucking nightmare.
You know, it'd be nice if Becky took after her mom in another way and shot this fucking loser. Fucking redheads, man. You can't trust them.
Drug-addled redheads.
Oh, it's just not all of us?
Some of us.
Okay. We are 10 minutes into this episode, Roundabouts, and we are leaning real hard into beating women.
I mean, what would you suggest that, like, be more spread out?
Not just not beating women, mostly. It would be my...
But it happens. I mean, women get beat. You know, so if an artist wants to put, you know, a scene in there where female characters in peril, they can do
that. Two in 8 minutes.
Maybe he's trying to elicit an emotional response from you by bombarding you with it.
One wasn't enough. After the first scene, you're like, that's fine. It took the second one, you're like, oh, hitting women is bad.
Oh, that's exactly. I mean, any normal person watches those scenes and is nauseated. If you watch those scenes and you're like, look, yeah, I'm glad David Lynch put extra beating women in this episode.
Wow, it has to be a dude from the South, Adam.
Yeah,
we're stereotyping. Wow.
You're right. Southern boys can be totally
woke. They can be
woke as well. Yeah. I don't disagree with you.
I understand your point, but it's overkill is my point. It's too much.
Where is too much? I mean, neither of you are filmmakers. I mean, we've never edited anything before. I mean, maybe he's got something very particular in his mind. I mean, I would...
As a consumer, I'm saying as someone ingesting this media.
It's not fun for you. And that's a fair criticism.
And no one's saying it should be fun. Normally, when you see something like this, you also see the consequences of behaving this way. And knowing how David Lynch does things, I don't foresee these bad characters getting the comeuppance that they deserve.
Well, I
can't wait to be proven wrong, but
just hang tight.
As in life, we need to move on. So we're going to the Silver Mustang Casino. We're having a real fun gag here with Candy. She is following along the buzzing of a fly. And I gotta say, throw some of your fucking budget at a CGI fly, because it looks so dumb to have her look out of frame because they didn't want to bother with it, you know? Even though you could have someone, a digital effects artist, paint in a fly to wherever her eyeline is. Why not just do that?
Yeah, maybe.
They had a fucking, you know, electric tree with bubblegum for a brain.
Why couldn't you get a fucking fly?
Could have painted a fly in, man.
I don't know. Maybe they, you know, had it done in post and they just didn't like it and they thought, hell, maybe, it, you know, it's more fun. It's a throwback if you don't actually see it.
Bubblegum brains, man. Okay.
Rodney Mitchum is reviewing criminal
papers.
Yeah, Las Vegas casino stuff. And Candy, the kind of the main assistant, is trying to help and take care of this fly that has been buzzing around. She doesn't want Rodney to be bothered while he's working. Candy's heart is in the right place, but as we find out that she's not quite synced in with this reality, and so she just isn't paying attention to Rodney, just the fly, and completely clobbers him to get the fly. Like smacks him with a remote in the face, which would hurt anybody, even a mobster.
And then they're shouting and
she starts crying. Yeah.
Jim Belushi's there.
General craziness. But yeah, to not see these guys and then all of a sudden just be thrown into a gag like this, it's very jarring.
Yeah.
I really think their assistants are tuned into White Lodge level stuff. They're very innocent, very kind. But
why do you think that?
When we first see them in the casino, when that guy with the beard is getting beaten, you recognize him. He's a comedian.
Yeah, it's Brett Gunn.
Candy just checks out and she just looks like she's hypnotized, like operating on a whole other level. Like, I don't think she's totally there. I really think that we don't get much more than that. There's no solid evidence. It's just a feeling that they're good people.
So people that like the show are making wild speculations when really the more obvious solution is that she's just stupid.
Yeah, it could be that she is just
stupid. She's probably,
stupid.
I mean, she could just be dumb.
Well, later in the
episode. Because the character is played
dumb. Yeah, and they mentioned it later in the episode. You probably didn't notice it.
No, I noticed it.
Well, no, Rodney kind of made a face like, why don't we fire her?
Right, and then the brother says, what
would she
do? She
would have nowhere else to go. Yeah, so they're good people.
She's just a dumb.
Yeah, but like,
her. Like people, they're like, oh, well, what's it mean? Some people just are dumb, and then it's okay for people.
Yeah, and that, yeah, that very well be.
Yeah, that whole thing is weird. This whole thing is weird.
It's odd.
You got these three people. Only one of them matters, so why not just hire one? I got thoughts.
Trying to help
people
out.
I got feelings. The end of this scene is what I've got for you.
Yeah, we'll move on.
We're going on to what I've been hoping for a long time now.
You've been screaming about this for episodes now, screaming and screaming. I have nightmares about Dan screaming to me about getting Dougie Coop to the doctor's office.
Yeah. We are in Dr. Ben's office, if I heard correctly.
Mm-hmm. You said he looked familiar.
Yeah, I recognize his man's face, the actor.
John Billingsley, who also played Dr. Vlox on Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay, so, as we mentioned, Cooper Dougie is seeing a doctor.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Round of applause.
Oh, huzzah!
Yeah, not only is he seeing a doctor, but his appointment is going really well. He's killing it.
Yeah, he is looking very healthy. He's lost a lot of weight. And guys, not the doctor I was hoping that you would bring him to. His physical health was not the main concern. Come on.
Yeah, don't forget he had that car accident. Sometimes it affects him from time to time.
Yeah. And not a whole lot goes on here. We see that Kyle MacLachlan, I'm assuming that
he looks fantastic. Like,
my God.
Must work out every day and eat. Yeah.
Seems exhausting.
Yeah, exactly.
His appointment is going very well. And it seems like Janie E's pants are getting a little tight around the crotchal region.
I think seeing Dougie without his shirt on and things have been kind of slowing down.
Even though you know she helps him get dressed every fucking morning. But
that's true.
Okay. Yeah,
but it's starting to happen. Dougie is slowly bringing out positivity and love and all that great stuff from everybody he encounters. And now it's kind of...
She's getting horned up.
Yeah, it's culminating here. Janie E is just falling in love with not Dougie, but Cooper. It's this, you know, this shell of a man.
Yeah. Which... You know, when you think about it like that, is weird. Like, oh, that dumb motherfucker. I want to fuck that.
We don't know what kind of relationship they had before this, so who knows?
I mean, we do. I mean, kind of, superficially. We know he was a cheater. We know he was, he would abandon them.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's hard for old Cooper Dougs, and that's it.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Yeah, physically. He's doing well physically. She's doing very well physically. And we're going back to the Silver Mustang Casino. Okay, the lady, Candy. I gotta tell you, I was so confused by who these people were, and I was like slowly coming to the realization of like, oh, that's who these people, oh, that's what's going on, that I don't even remember this scene. Adam, did anything happen? They're watching the news, right?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
They're sitting there, and Candy is very upset because she clobbered Rodney earlier. The other two are making a drink. Rodney, you could tell, he feels bad for Candy. He's like, it's okay, relax, like, chill. These two are mobsters, and they do kill people, but we're starting to get a very clear picture of them as decent human beings. Like, they are criminals, but they're the kind of Robin Hood-type criminals. Like, they would never murder innocent people or anything like that.
Are you saying that they're not going to try and kill Cooper Dougie?
Well, I mean, Mr. C wants them to do those things, okay. And if tricked, they would definitely be violent enough to do those things. But if they knew the situation, no, they would never kill Cooper because someone wanted them to.
I would also say that they beat the shit out of their old floor manager.
They did. And yeah.
I will also say that they, in this scene, we learned that they had a hit out on Ike the Spike.
Yeah, he's murderous assassin.
So turn him into the police like he did. Like, yeah, you don't put a hit out. That's hiring an assassin to kill an assassin. So I'm just saying, they're maybe not the altruistic fellas
they're not totally good. But anyway, while they're sitting there just kind of having their drinks and Candy's crying, the news comes on.
Right.
And you remember that weird news segment that we got a few episodes after Ike attacked Janie E. and Cooper?
Yeah,
well, here we are. We get to see it on the television. So maybe that's kind of why we were in that moment right then and there. So when we cut to the Mitchum brothers watching that news report, we're like, oh, yeah. And lo and behold, they see their Mr. Jackpots, the guy that ripped them off for all that money.
Sure.
And they were just kind of like, holy shit. So they've made the connection. They think this is Dougie Jones.
What makes them think that he ripped them off?
Because he won jackpot after jackpot. That's not really possible. And he had supernatural intervention to help
facilitate
that.
But they're fucking slots. Like, he wasn't counting cards. He was pulling a lever.
They think it was some sort of sophisticated attack on their machines.
Wow, I'm just going to need some more evidence to support their claims is all.
They're not to the point where they're trying to hunt him down, but they're just like, hey, something fishy is going on with this guy. And it's Mr. Dougie Jones. That's our Mr. Jackpots.
All right. Well, Adam, I would like to take you for a slice of cake at 25140 Lancelot Court.
Dry piece of cake.
It did. It looked dry. And, you know, I'm sure Janie E. did her best. Or maybe that's the birthday cake from like 3 days ago.
Oh, it's yeah. You're probably
gonna
right.
It's going to start to get old. It's not going to be as moist as day one. It's not going to be, oh, never mind.
We're going to a very scary place.
I was going to make a gross joke, and I am not going to do it. Anyway,
Janie E is eyeballing. Yeah, she is bursting at the seams with sexual energy.
Yeah, Janie E wants some of that Cooper D. Boom! Nailed it!
Yeah, it pretty much happens. She's like, all right, this is happening. And we cut to the bedroom.
Yeah, the boudoir.
Yes, and Janie E and Dougie are sharing a nice little moment together.
Yeah, some coitus.
Yeah, and I gotta say, this is a very great scene as far as like Cooper fans, because it's like for a moment he can feel alive again and kind of remember what it was like to have sex and be alive and not trapped in an alternate dimension.
Here's a little darkness for you, though. Are we sure that Cooper Dougie can consent? He can't verbally consent.
Yeah.
Janie E kind of raped Cooper Dougie.
She doesn't know.
But we do. I just wanted to darken that doorway that you were trying to step through,
yeah,
you know?
It doesn't. Obviously, the look on Cooper's face is one we have not seen before, and it is a look of pure contentment and joy. So I would think that he is in there somewhere.
That's the look we all get in the presence of a willing partner, you know?
Just hear, hear. Like, this is amazing. Why? I'm so lucky.
Someone is doing this to me. Oh, boy.
But I really like the moment they had in bed afterwards, just that nice kind of tune.
Cuddling.
Yeah, just cuddling. And it was just like, for a second, he was almost got that life that he was denied.
It's nice. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, I just want to reiterate, Janie E. raped Cooper Dougie. We'll be right back.
After the accidental death of their close buddy Eugene, a group of six friends gathers in a backyard fallout bunker for one last D&D game to mourn his loss and celebrate his life. All is going as well as it can until an earth-shaking event pulls the group into a millennia-long war between two interdimensional empires. Follow the trials and tribulations of being in over your head when it comes to interdimensional war, interspecies relations, and the complete destruction of all universes in A Beginner's Guide to Interplanetary Destruction, an award, nominated narrative podcast from the Calamity Cast Network. Check it out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and CalamityCast.com.
Will Jack, the gym-loving, male-nurse hottie, managed to win the heart of the spunky, blue-haired web designer Maggie? Join us every other week to discover if this unlikely pair will have their happily ever after or fizzle out in the end. Love and Lust Season 1 is available for your listening enjoyment now at CalamityCast.com or anywhere you find podcasts.
We are back here at the Black Lodge Complaint Department. We're glad that you joined us, folks. We're talking about part 10 here.
Adam, I gotta interrupt you because it's time for Dr. Amp, motherfucker!
Yeah! I love Dr. Amp.
Get amped!
He needs his own energy drink. There probably already are Dr. Amp energy drinks out there.
Do you think it's shit flavored?
Yeah, we're finally back with Dr. Amp, who's hitting the airwaves once again with his message of
nightly broadcast, right?
Yeah.
Every night, he's got a new episode up.
I mean, what else is he doing besides painting shovels gold? So he just writes his monologues and paints.
So this scene actually has more to do with Nadine for bizarre reasons. Now, you know I love Nadine, but I feel like this scene means nothing. You know, this is just seeing what Nadine's doing, but Nadine has no bearing on the story, right?
No, not Mr. C's story. They're not affected by Mr. C's story like some of the other characters are.
So this is just, we're seeing Nadine and how she was able to become successful with her silent drape runners.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very subtle. There's no exposition as to how it happened.
Very subtle.
We just see her sitting in the office of her silent drape runner store.
There's a lot going on with season three, and I like that he found the time to work this stuff in. I know some people weren't a fan of how some of the more important characters from the original series weren't really big players in the return, but the return is more about the shit show that happened when Cooper went into the lodge. And as cool as those people were, they just weren't in that orbit. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's cool that we kind of go back and see how they're doing. But I don't think people that love Nadine and Ed and all those characters, nothing would ever have been enough or good enough. You know,
That's true.
Just kind of what it is.
So are Nadine and Ed divorced?
No, they're still together.
That's good. How many subscribers do you think old Dr. Amp has? Like, how many millions, I mean, you know?
Millions?
Yeah, oh yeah.
He seems like a guy that's probably got, like, over 10,000, you know?
10 million, you mean? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We're all watching Dr. Amp. Like and subscribe, am I right, y'all? This scene, as I said, I mean, I'm of two minds, because it is kind of making the main plot come to a screeching halt, but I do like Nadine, so
yeah, and she was non-existent for that second season, so you kind of really want to see this Nadine that doesn't think she's 16.
Although she's kind of non-existent for this either. She's yet to have a line.
And like the Mitchum brothers, this is kind of a similar thing. Like, hey, remember Nadine? This is where she's at. She's probably going to pop back up again soon.
I hope so, and there's no way for me to know, because I'm never watching it.
I quit.
Yeah. That's silly. We're moving on from Nadine's wonderfully successful silent drape runner.
Did you notice she's got a gold?
She did. Yeah, she had a gold shovel on display.
She is a big fan.
Well, good. As we all are. Like and subscribe. Back to 25140 Lancelot Court, sir. Mr. Jones and me's house. It's the next day.
The morning after.
Yeah.
Some might say.
Janie E is still a little weak in the knees.
She's got the glow.
Yeah. And Dougie, he, you know, he's looking as good as he can.
He's got his suit on, his FBI suit, not the green abomination, lime green sports jacket they had him in earlier.
Before Cooper came along and took over Dougie, and when she was married to Dougie, was he just ignoring the sexual needs of his wife?
Probably.
That's a shame. It's not like...
Her issues seem to stem from the fact that Dougie's a shithead.
Right. Like, she herself seems like a well-adjusted... not doting. She's not like...
She strikes me as a very
strong...
But a good partner, a strong person that has just become so utterly frayed by the shitty behavior of her duplicate husband.
Yeah. So the idea that her husband, who is a bad man, and she is a good woman, doing the best that she can, and seems like a fine personality, like someone you could get along with, that you would also want to be there for that person
Dougie
in all
was,
manners.
I mean, like Richard, anything that comes off of Mr. C is just corrupted and dark and bad.
That's a shame. She deserved better. Fucking Dougie, like, he's going out and hiring sex workers to engage with, and he's got a perfectly willing, ready, happy partner. And you know what? The whole
that
thing
was his Garmon Bozia, you could say. You know.
Boy. You know what? Point being, she getting that good dick now, so.
She's in a
Janie
good mood.
Janie is fine.
Yeah, and it's got to be good for Cooper. He's starting to sharpen a little bit, but not quite. He's still a long way from the Cooper we know.
Listen, I don't mean to interrupt, but we have to go to the woods of Twin Peaks because Jerry's still lost.
Right now.
We got to go. It's important.
Really, this has only been like 3 days since Cooper left.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming Jerry has only been out there for maybe a day, but hopefully he has some water. He's got some granola bars or something.
Yeah. Are we watching Jerry slowly die? Is that what's happening right now?
No. But I do worry about him.
Yes. We should both be worried.
He might need to cool off on the edibles just for a little bit.
Yeah. Don't take him into the woods, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to the woods, you stay sober.
Jerry kind of represents our experience as we stumble through the new world of Twin Peaks, and everything's kind of, I don't know where I am. This is weird.
I would agree with that 100%, sir. And there's nothing of substance here. We just got to see Jerry confused in the woods.
And guess what, Dan?
What?
We're going right back to Twin Peaks.
We didn't leave.
Well, he's not in Twin Peaks anymore. He's in the woods, lost.
I just assumed in the woods. Twin Peaks.
Okay, and your favorite character, Chad.
Fuck Chad, leave Lucy alone, Chad, you fucking dirtbag.
Yeah, we know he's up to something right away.
Piece of shit. What's he doing in the lobby? He's not even allowed up front.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the day, he has to come in through the back.
Yeah, and up there breathing on all those nice donuts.
Those aren't your donuts, Chad.
Fuck you, Chad.
God damn it, Chad.
So he's up there trying to get that letter that Miriam sent to the sheriff.
He's such a condescending little fuck.
And Lucy knows something is up immediately. Oh, she's like, the fuck is he doing just standing up here?
This motherfucker, he's up to something.
Yeah.
Don't trust him. Lucy, do not trust this man.
And we figure out that he's just waiting for the postman to arrive so he can get the mail. And he's just lingering up there, loitering at the lobby so he has an excuse to go outside.
And so he goes outside, he meets the mailman. He's so excited. He wanted to experience this beautiful day. He tells Lucy some bullshit story. And he goes out and he gets the mail.
And the mailman even shoots him some eyes, like he never comes out to get the mail.
Even the mailman doesn't trust a fucking Chad.
The White Lodge, they work in very subtle but important ways.
Yeah. He gets the letter. That's the thing that sucks, is he is successful in his mission. He goes back inside, and he stuffs another fucking donut in his shitty turd mouth.
All right, yeah, fuck you, Chad.
Fuck you, Chad. I'm out of here, man. Oh, I don't want to go to the next scene, Adam.
Yeah, this is a bad, lot of traumatizing stuff this episode. It's a lot of it is Richard Horne just, you know, like a bat out of hell trying to fix this problem he created the other day, but he's just making things infinitely worse for himself and everyone around him.
So we're at